I'd actually like to point out something that maybe isn't so obvious. You're doing things that you're good at. And that's actually a huge problem, doing things that you're good at. The problem is then you never go hire somebody who's great at it. Okay, someone who lives and breathes that thing.
This is Digital Marketer.
Hey everyone, this is Mark DeGrasse, the president of Digital Marketer, and this is the podcast that keeps you up to date on everything you need to know when it comes to digital marketing, from the platforms you'd be focused on to the tactics and tools that are working today. Today, our guest is Frank Coel, the chief revenue boss of Revenue Ranch and a faculty member here at Digital Marketer, as well as a speaker who actually came to, was a certified partner or M3? Can't remember, Frank.
Maybe both.
Maybe both.
It's been quite a few things with Digital Marketer. Yeah.
Hey, that's how it works. You know, we find somebody who has, good philosophies, and then we have you back as much as possible to make sure that our community knows what you're doing and how to do it. So I know last time we had you on and we kind of discussed kind of the overall philosophy of what you teach. And now I figured today, kind of the second part of the series, we could talk about specifically how it applies to, business ownership and management. Because I know, when you're a founder, you want to do everything. You don't trust anybody to do anything right, and you end up overworked and not growing. So how do we fix that?
Yeah. First off, Mark, thanks for having me back. And I love doing, different events with Digital Marketer. You folks are great. You've always been good to me. And I think the community is just such a wonderful community of people. We're just looking to do awesome things in digital marketing and create, really great, impactful businesses. So it's an honor to be with you again. Enjoy it. And for those of you who are listening today, and you maybe didn't hear the previous podcast that I was on with Mark, hopefully, Mark, we can link to that in the show notes somewhere.
Yeah, definitely.
And I would recommend that you go listen to that episode if you have not already, because in that episode, we talked about 7 capabilities that every business must master. And that was, elevating yourself to the entrepreneur lens of the business and looking at your business through these 7 capabilities, which I think no matter what business you own or buy, you have to look at these 7 capabilities and rate the business on those things. So once you have a handle on that and you start understanding the business from that level, this episode, what we're going to do is we're going to dive into the philosophies of the first 2 capabilities. And so those first 2 capabilities were really about strategy and execution. And so when I look at those 2 capabilities, that's really about leveling yourself up from this idea of a founder to more of a CEO. Now, I'm going to put an asterisk there because the reality is the vast majority of small businesses, we're talking if you're under 10, 8 million, if you're kind of under that range, if you're under 10 million, more times than not, CEO is not a full-time job. It's just not. You don't need to be doing CEO stuff full time. And we can talk about that at another point if people want to dig into it. But the mentality, though, that mentality shift is what you need to make. How do you go from founder to CEO? So the problem is that when we started our businesses, it took this founder mentality. The founder mentality is one where we roll up our sleeves, we get stuff done, we get scrappy, right? We make sure to save the day and we kind of have to spin all the plates ourselves. And that's necessary. That is actually a really positive, good thing. That said, there comes a point in time where you have to mature beyond that founder brute force, as I call it. That founder brute force, don't get me wrong. Again, required. It's awesome. It's a great skill and trait. It's how all of these businesses, all of our businesses get off the ground. But at some point, you have to graduate your mentality. You have to graduate your approach. And so that's this idea I talk about of shifting your mindset from founder-led to really CEO-driven. And that's about creating direction, creating a team that's aligned that can take on these other capabilities. So it's no longer about the founder being the one to save the day. I often call those founders who continue to operate in that mode for too long, that what they're really doing is operating a superhero-driven business. And superhero-driven businesses, more times than not, don't scale.
It's just too restrictive. I mean, there's only so much time that even the most amazing AI-powered person can do. So even in the case where we're using automation and maybe we have some good processes and all this kind of stuff, it doesn't matter. There's only so many hours in the day. And honestly, you're probably wasting your time, your owner time, doing stuff that maybe a receptionist could do or an assistant or somebody who is paid way less than you.
And I'd actually like to point out something that maybe isn't so obvious. You're doing things that you're good at.
Or you like.
Yeah, that's actually a huge problem. Doing things that you're good at. The problem is then you never go hire somebody who's great at it. Okay, someone who lives and breathes that thing. And so that's the kind of shift that we're talking about. If we were to go through a thought exercise, Mark, and I were to say, you can no longer do anything inside the business. In fact, all you could do is have a meeting once per week and you would have to get an update from people on the team. What would you do? How would you make sure that that business is successful? And so that's what those seven capabilities are that we talked about. Again, go listen to that episode if you haven't done so already. Those seven capabilities are what you as the entrepreneur need to make sure you bring to life in the business. Again, those first two are about the business strategy. And the second one is how you go about getting people aligned in cadences of planning and management on a regular basis to methodically tackle the blockers to growth and to create momentum in the business. And when you can do that with a team of leaders, as opposed to a superhero making most of it happen, things radically shift for you. So we could talk today, if you'd like, about I have seven philosophies within this realm of strategy and execution.
Well, before we get to that, because I think it's easy to say give away your tasks and delegate your tasks and your time is more valuable. And I love how you pointed out how we end up doing the stuff that we like and that we're good at, which we also need to stop doing. How do you convince somebody who maybe they've been doing their business for 10 years, maybe they've always done it like this and they're so fixed in that, like, I'm the only one that could do this right. Do you have any tips for that? Because I know we help logic. Right? Like, you'll make more money, you'll scale, you'll be less stressed, you'll work less, like all those things everybody loves. However, we're talking about entrepreneurs here,
right?
Like, these people are specifically not in a job working for somebody else because they don't like to, give away their freedom. And so some people would actually say, like, I feel like I don't know what to do if I'm not doing the thing that I made this business for and I'm good at. Like, how do you get around that? I mean, it's a huge shift.
Yeah, so I have a couple of comments there. One, I would say that most of those people aren't actually entrepreneurs. What they are is they're craftspeople. They're in love with the craft. They're in love with the craft. And there's nothing wrong with that. In fact, if you wanted to go build heirloom style coffee tables and have no employees and that's all you ever do and that's your business, hey, more power to you. But if you want to scale the business that makes coffee tables, then you can no longer be the best craftsperson in that business. Same with agency businesses. If you want to scale that agency business, you no longer can be the one who's the best at the agency services. And so if you don't, and you want to be the craftsperson, that's okay too. But so many people I talk to say they want to grow and they want to scale and they want to realize their dreams that this business is supposed to provide for them. And so in that scenario, we actually have to act like more of an entrepreneur, which means we have to detach our egos from the work, because the work isn't about what our hands can physically do. It's about how well we can gather a team that produces the value for the clients. So that's one comment.
Hey everyone, I wanted to quickly interrupt the podcast for a special announcement. If you're listening to this podcast because you want to become a better marketer, then I want to share with you what I believe to be the most comprehensive digital marketing program on the market today. It's called the Digital Marketing Mastery Certification. You'll learn to leverage the tools and channels to predictably and profitably drive awareness, leads, sales, and referrals. Everything you need to know to become a true master of digital marketing.
We'll take an in-depth look at the core digital marketing competencies, including content, email, social media, community, digital advertising, data and optimization, and more. After earning your digital marketing strategist certificate, you'll have the tools to effectively reach your target audience through a full scope marketing strategy. Get started today at digitalmarketer.com/strategycert.
And the other comment I would say is, you know, my clients that get this the most, my clients that understand this quicker, I should say, are my clients that are a little bit on the older side. And the reason being is because with Father Time staring you in the face, the question becomes, well, if we don't change this mode, what happens? Is there a day where you can stop doing the work and the business continues to run and provides you some sort of income or exit or what have you? If the answer is no, that becomes a very scary thing to ponder.
And so end is what you're pondering, right?
Yeah. So my clients that are a little bit on the older side, they get it much faster. And I actually have to kind of put it that way and get them to confront what they kind of already know deep down, and I get them to say it. And so I ask them, so what's going to happen? How long can this go on? And what is the plan to not do the work anymore? Is that possible in your business as it stands today? Why not? And those are the same questions I would ask someone who's on the younger side. In fact, one of the things I have my clients do right away before I teach them my method is I have them take inventory on what they're already working with. I call it like the ingredients, right? So like if, for example, you wanted to make dinner at home tonight and the rule was you could only use what's in your kitchen and in your cupboards. And so if you walk into that kitchen and you have your mindset, I'm going to make the best prime rib I've ever had. Man, I just really want prime rib. I'm going to make prime rib. But when you go in there, all you really have are the ingredients to make like an amazing lasagna. Well, then you better get to making an amazing lasagna, right? And so the first thing I have my clients do is take inventory of what are you actually dealing with? What are your ingredients? And once you know that, then the question becomes, what should this business do for you personally? Knowing what you have to work with, knowing what where the passions are, the DNA of what you already have, what should this business do for you? And so once I get them to articulate what they personally want out of it, then we can start to craft a business that will support that. Because look, running a business is not for the faint of heart. Running a business is not easy. Even successful businesses are a pain in the rear.
Maybe especially.
Okay. That's right. So if we're going to go through that headache and heartache, it better be worth it. I may have mentioned this on the last episode, but one of the challenges I see is that folks in the agency space are all really nice people. And oftentimes I find that they're so nice, what they confuse nice with making poor business decisions. And so they end up doing things where they're growing a team and they're funding everyone and everything else and improving everyone else's lives, but they themselves have not improved their own life through the process. And that's wrong. That's just wrong, in my opinion, because it's a lot of headache and heartache. You sacrifice a lot to own a business. You spend time away from friends, family, your health, your well-being. And that shouldn't be the case for the long haul. We need to get out of that mode and we need to start benefiting you in those ways. So that's one of the first things we do is uncover, like, how should this business benefit you personally? What do you want out of it? How long do you want to be doing this? What would you be doing ideally on a day-to-day basis in the business or maybe not in the business?
But you know what's funny is I always, you know, you feel selfish when you start considering that. And I think for a lot of, you know, like you say, the entrepreneurs out there, like they love giving, right? It's why they're probably successful at the business that they have. And so the mindset that you have to transition is that your happiness and your well-being will actually lead to more success for the business. And it's not selfish to do these things because at the end of the day, like you're the boss. If you do fail, like let's say that you don't figure out how to systematize, you don't figure out how to outsource and delegate tasks and do all the essential management functions that you're talking about, then the business is going to fail. And then who loses?
Correct.
Literally everybody.
Everyone loses. In fact, I tell people this when they say, well, no, my business is cause related. I have a cause at the heart of my business. I say, great. I don't care if your cause is you and your family, or your cause is planting more trees, or your cause is feeding the homeless. Like, great. More profit, AKA a more successful business, means you can feed more homeless people, means you can go plant more trees, means you can take your family on more vacations, right? So whatever your purpose is, whatever that cause is, it's imperative that you're wildly successful at it, because you're going to give up a lot. You are going to sacrifice a lot. And many people listening today probably have already sacrificed a lot to do what you do. So it better be worth it. So we start there, because if we don't know how you're going to create the impact that you want for yourself, for your benefit, and again, you might benefit by planting the trees and having a cause. Great. If that's your benefit, know that and understand what kind of impact you want to make. More profit means more impact. So what kind of impact do you want? So we start there, and we want to make sure we create a business that does that.
Yes. Well, and that everybody's happy, including you. And your happiness could actually, lead to all more success. And it's not selfish. It's actually a function of business that you, manage your time efficiently and that you scale properly. And then, at the end of the day, your customers win and your more customers win, even more people. So I love that. And, I think it's, that's a really good way to look at it, because it feels, not selfish and more, almost altruistic to make this happen, and realistic and practical, all the good things, but not just, yeah. Oh, you can make a bazillion dollars. Because I think, if we've learned anything over the last year or two, is that, money matters less than you thought it did,
because
inflation.
Once you know what impact you want to make, once you know whether, again, that's on someone else or you or your family or all of the above, you can then start to assign a dollar amount to it. In most cases, that dollar amount might be a big number, but in most cases, it's not nearly as big as one might think. So this idea of I need a $100 billion exit. Do you?
You don't. What are you going to do with that?
Do you? You might. But if that's not based in you truly knowing what you want to gain and achieve from this business endeavor, it might be right. It might not be right. It should be based on what you're trying to have this business endeavor do from an impact standpoint.
I love that. Well, I think, and even, like you said, $100 million or $100 billion, whatever it is, it's like, yeah, that's exactly what Elon Musk did with the Cybertruck. Because a lot of people don't know that the whole design of the Cybertruck and the paneling, the stainless steel, the entire point was actually so it can increase panel construction so we could decrease the cost of a spaceship. Why this craziness happened was really because he's trying to get to Mars, and it has nothing to do with making a weird truck necessarily. It was just a means to an end. And so I think even in the biggest visions that we all have, like, you could still plan for that, and you could still make logical business decisions that are profitable for everybody and get what you want.
Yeah, and I think that's a great segue into, I think, the first philosophy of strategy and execution that I share with my clients. And that is the philosophy that you need to have what I call a true north. It needs to be clear, compelling, and shared with the team. And then on a day-to-day basis, you need to reject everything that doesn't align to true north. So that's philosophy number one. If you don't know where you're going and why you're going there, and it's not clear and compelling to you and everyone on the team, and subsequently, if you don't make decisions that align with that, you're destined to kind of be stuck in spinning your wheels.
Yes. And that's not something, well, that's what we all get stuck in. You know, it sounds like, oh yeah, you don't want to get stuck there, but it's probably 99% of entrepreneurs are stuck right there.
You have to know that. It has to be really clear. And what I mean by true north is, I often tell my clients that metaphorically, your business strategy should cut. Like, if I were to touch your business strategy, it should cut me. Like, it should be that sharp, which means we have to make decisions about who we're going to serve very specifically, the transformation we're going to bring to them very specifically, the service promises we make, and so on. Like, that has to be really, really clear, especially in today's world. If we don't have it that clear and compelling, there's just too much noise out there. There are too many options in the marketplace.
And honestly, our customers gain more and more discerning because everybody has, less money. So they're not willing to take the risk that they used to. So if you don't have the kind of clarity that you're talking about, nobody's actually just going to show up. They're going to find somebody who probably has an equally great service, but also has a mission that people can latch onto.
Yeah, it needs to speak to that audience, their situation, their specific struggle, the culprit they're dealing with, in the specific transformation you bring. When it speaks to them on that level, then they're not shopping on services and price. They're shopping for a partner to help bring an outcome. And so what I'd encourage everyone to do is write down, and leave it on your desk for you to stare at until you solve this. I want you to write this phrase down. The world doesn't need another fill in the blank. So if you're an agency, put agency. If you're a PR firm, put PR firm. If you're a design shop, if you're a manufacturer, put the world does not need another agency. I want you to write that down. Put it on your desk. I want you to look at it every day until you realize that when you are just another agency or fill in the blank, you're not clear and compelling to a specific audience.
Yeah. Why would people come to you? And I think it's so broad. And I think one of the trappings that people have is that, if I just have 1% of the market, then I'll be successful. And so they aren't thinking of the broad market and all these people they could serve. They're only thinking of I just need my little piece. And that's it. And I think that's another way that people get stuck into not scaling, like you're talking about, or not managing like you can scale. So
yeah,
that's a great way to, kind of change the situation. Now, let's say that you've done that. So you've realized okay, I need to scale. I need to give away these tasks that are basically stopping growth because I'm managing them personally. What would you say is the next step for the process?
Okay, so we've done that, right? We have that mentality shift. We now have a clear, compelling true north, right? We know exactly who we're for, where we're going. The second thing would be to shift your thinking from having long-term goals, but only short-term objectives. This is really, really important. Really important. There's a massive difference between goals and objectives. And it is my opinion, I'm going to make a really bold statement here, and it may come off a little, I don't want it to come off arrogant, but it's my opinion that the vast majority of the world uses the word goal wrong, okay? The vast majority of the world, when they say goal, what they actually mean is objective, okay? What's the difference? A goal is a sentimental driving direction about where you're headed. The objective is a specific measurement along that journey. So a lot of people will say, hey, make sure your goals are smart, specific, measurable, agree to, realistic, and time-bound. When you make a goal smart, it's no longer a goal, it's an objective. So for example, Walt Disney had a goal for Disneyland to be the happiest place on earth. That is a goal. By the way, some of the best goals in the world never complete. They're forever statements. To be the happiest place on earth never finishes. It never completes. Now, he had an objective to be open to the public July 17th, 1955. That was an objective. That wasn't a goal. A lot of people say, oh, that's your goal. No, it's not. You'll know it's your goal when you can finally say, this is why we're doing it. Here's why it matters. Okay? So for example, in your personal life, you said, I want to be the best father I possibly can be. That's a goal. That's never ending. I want to take my son on 4 camping trips this year. That's my goal. No, that's the objective. Why? Because you want to be the best father you possibly can be. So that's the difference. The goal is the sentiment. It's the direction. It's the why behind. And the objective is the measurement. So now back to my philosophy, long-term goals, okay? Something that inspires and gets you out of bed and points you in a direction. Short-term objectives. So for example, if we were to look in your sales area, okay? So let's look at your sales function of the business. You might have a goal that you want to improve close rates, right? The sentiment there is that you need to just get better at closing, okay? You might have an objective this quarter to standardize your sales deck, Next quarter, you might have an objective to develop a training on the sales deck. The next quarter, you might have an objective to teach it to one of, you know, have one additional person run that process, right? These are all objectives towards that goal of improving your sales close rates. Does that make sense? So have long-term goals, but short-term objectives. Short-term objectives are critical to keep people engaged. It also allows you to recalibrate on a regular basis. It's like, for example, in aviation, they have this thing called the 1 degree rule. And it says something like, you know, for every 60 miles, you are 1 degree off course if you don't recalibrate. Something to that effect.
It adds up. Yeah.
Yeah. It's called the 1 degree rule. So same thing in business. With my clients, I specifically forbid them from setting like, you know, a 3-year revenue target. Like, I really don't care. What I care about is, what is your revenue target next quarter? How many leads are you going to generate next quarter? And all I want you to do is beat the number from last quarter. Okay. But all towards the goal, which is the direction. Okay. So that's the second thing.
I love that. I mean, both aspects I think are very simple, you know, but very understandable and achievable if you could just get over that mindset. Cause I think a lot of, you know, entrepreneurs, it's definitely a personality type, and it is hard to shift because you have the vision and you're the worker and you put in more than everybody else. And, you know, there is value in all of that. But like you say, I mean, you're limiting your ability to expand, your ability to employ other people and help them succeed, and your ability to serve more customers. And if you think you have the best thing, then that's a failure. Unless that's not part of it. Like, I only want to help a few people. That's fine. Then you're not planning on getting to the 100 million or whatever you're trying to achieve, because what you're doing right now doesn't serve that at all. And, you know, a couple shifts and you'll be good to go. And your business won't die.
Hopefully. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yep.
Well, thank you so much, Frank. This has been fantastic. Really actionable tips that I think everybody can use. You know, all entrepreneurs, definitely agency owners, and, you know, marketers in general, because I think we're probably more guilty than most at getting obsessed with the thing that we really like to do and not systematizing and growing the business like we ultimately are trying to achieve. And I think, you know, you really have an outline for how to systematically go through the process to scale. So next time we'll be talking, what do we say, the growth engine.
We're talking about the growth engine, right? If the first two areas are really about how you level up from founder mentality to CEO mentality, and you put in place an approach to planning and management, approach to how you're going to grow the business, no matter what problem you're tackling, then the next piece is looking at the growth engine, which is made up of your service offering, your sales process, and your lead generation process. Those three things together work hand in hand to create your growth engine.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for coming on, Frank. I am looking forward to the next episode where we can talk about the growth engine. I think, you know, starting with the management, though, makes a ton of sense, because you want to get people in the right mindset before you start thinking about that. How do we grow systematically?
You got to level yourself up, and you have to move out of that entrepreneur, brute force, founder-led approach, and you have to have a system that gets your entire... where you're growing a leadership team, not just in your service offering, but across the major capabilities of the business. And so when you can do that, you can start having a different mentality about growing the business. Again, that thought experiment, if all you could ever do is just meet with your leadership team once per week, and that's all you could do, and you had, you know, 2 hours to meet with them and nothing more, what information would you need? What direction would you give? Who would you hire?
Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Frank. In the meantime, before we have you on for that next topic, where can people learn more about you?
Yeah. So my business is called Revenue Ranch. You can go to revenueranch.com. I have a number of free trainings and assets available there. Also, freemyagency.com will take you right to one of my free training courses.
Well, thanks again, Frank. Really appreciate your time on the last episode. And we'll actually be providing links to all the episodes. So be sure to check in the description to see if they're already there, because there's a chance that we publish them all when you're listening to this. But definitely check them all out, because Frank has a fantastic framework. And if you can understand all of it, you can really scale up anything you want. So thank you so much, Frank. Appreciate your time.
Absolutely, Mark. Take care.
All right. Thank you so much for listening. Be sure to hit that follow button so you get notified when all of our new episodes release. Please share this with that friend who's clueless about digital marketing. And don't forget to visit digitalmarketer.com where you can access all of our courses, certifications, and training programs. Thanks again, everyone. We'll see you next time.
This is Digital Marketer.
Get ready for the two easiest ways for you to generate product photos for your e-commerce store. I'm Lauren Petrullo, founder and CEO of Mongoose Media and Digital Marketer Academy faculty member. I've managed over 50,000 SKUs for over 100 different e-commerce sites, and I cannot tell you the importance of quality product photos. Not only are they important for your website, but they're great to be repurposed in your email marketing campaigns, your paid ad initiatives, and your organic social media content. It's imperative that you have great photos because great photos sell your products and start conversations with your consumers. There are two great solutions when seeking out quality product photos for your e-commerce site. One, UGC. We know that native user-generated content wins all day on social. When you can get your customers to share back their use of your products in their voice, in their personal applications, you will see dividends when that is repurposed in your paid ads and organic social feeds. Secondly, don't have customers or UGC yet? Not a problem. There are cost-effective solutions in which you can outsource that photography. This and so much more is covered in my modules in our e-commerce cert with Digital Marketer.